Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Monday morning. Broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We're taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Joe, the Women's National Championship game yesterday, South Carolina finishes the job. They finished the season undefeated at 38-0. They went 87-75 against Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes. First off, I thought a great game Friday night, Joe, between UConn and Iowa. It was back and forth. UConn got out to the early lead. Iowa came storming back in the second half. There was, for some reason, people that are really, 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 really mad about the illegal screen called on UConn, which I thought was pretty clearly an illegal screen, and I saw you barking at people on Twitter about that all weekend. But Iowa wins. They get to the final against South Carolina. And, Joe, it's pretty clear. Like, you know, Caitlin Clark started the game yesterday on fire. I think she had like 13 points in the first like 3 minutes. It was unbelievable to watch. But it was clear as the game went on that South Carolina is just too much. And we've talked about South Carolina all year, how good they are. Obviously, they finished the season undefeated. So an undefeated national champion. And I just, you know, Caitlin Clark, I thought she was 5 of 13 for 3 yesterday. I thought she tried her best to keep her team in it. But South Carolina really is just too talented up and down the board, and they finished the job. And what a run by them this year, another national title for Dawn Staley and company. And an undefeated one at that in a tournament, Joe, where they got tested a couple of times. Obviously, the SEC tournament, Tennessee had them beat and then just didn't guard them. So the undefeated part of it almost came to an end a couple of different times, but they get it done and finish the job.
Yeah, clearly the best team, without question. And I figured, you know, when Caitlin Clark had 18 in the first quarter, so I'm like, well, there you go. That's what it's going to take. And, you know, they did a great job. Raven Johnson did a really good job on her. And you could just see the legs going. Like, some of her shots later were just coming up short.
Yep.
And they wore down. They wore Iowa down. Just clearly the best team, incredible team, program, coach, players. I mean, just really that's the flagship program now in college, in women's college basketball, South Carolina. Yeah, then the Caitlin Clark thing, there's just still, yeah, the moving pick thing, I'll give Scott Van Pelt credit, for example, because they were all mad about it. Everybody was mad about it. And on the replay that ESPN kept showing, I get it, because they weren't showing the leg extending.
Yeah.
Right? Once you saw a couple of the other angles, it's like, it's so blatant. Actually, there's an angle from the side of the UConn bench that Nancy Lieberman tweeted out. And it's like, if you watch it in real time, it's like, it would be egregious to not call it. You have to call it. I mean, it was the right call.
Well, it sets up one of my least favorite things in sports. It sets up one of my least favorite things in sports, Joe, of the, well, you can't make that call in that situation because it affects the outcome of the game. It's like, well, guess what? If you don't call it, it also affects the outcome of the game. It drives me nuts.
Yes, absolutely. So, I agree. So, I understand the idea of, like, you'd rather see a basketball play decide the game. Because I tweeted, like, you know, yeah, you'd rather see players. And I still am getting tweets from people like, well, players did decide the game by committing a foul. Yes, yes. But you know what we're saying. People would rather see a shot go in or not, right? And that would not be a whistle. But you have to call it. And it was the right call. I mean, some people compare it to the Super Bowl. I still don't think the Super Bowl call was right on the Chiefs Eagles. That's just me. I didn't think that was the right call. But it's the same idea, which is, if it is the right call, then you call it no matter when in the game it is. And you have to, because otherwise then you're giving, like you said, you're giving the unfair advantage to the other team, which is what that was. It was Paige Beckers actually coming off the screen for the shot. Like, that was the key screen of the whole thing. You cannot do what she did. So that was – and, you know, Caitlin Clark, all through the weekend, like, I'm seeing, like, Diana Taurasi, you know, reality's coming. And maybe she's right. Like, maybe Caitlin Clark should go to the WNBA and just get, you know, humbled and all. I'm sure there'll be some level of that, but the Caitlin Clark, maybe it's just particularly UConn people because they're sad about not being like the best program anymore. Yes. I don't know, but just seems like there's a lot of bitterness that's not necessary, you know, toward her right now. But I thought she handled it great. And also I thought, and you know, props to Dawn Staley for handling everything she handled this weekend, including idiotic questions that are, you know, by an idiotic people who work for an idiot. But also for Dawn Staley, the way that she gave class to Caitlin Clark yesterday, I thought that was a really impressive, just to, because she's right. I mean, Caitlin Clark did a lot for the sport this year, the last 2 years, but especially this year. And so I thought that was cool of Dawn Staley to do that. And then she also, by the way, I mean, I could just turn this into a Dawn Staley love fest. She goes out and all the TV reporters who came out to cover it, she gives them all one-on-ones on her own. Just said, let's go. Let's do all the one-on-ones on the court. Like, that's freaking cool, man.
And then there's the men's game tonight, Purdue and UConn, starting at 8:20, which for the life of me, I can't figure out why we're starting a national title game at 8:20 Central time tonight, but apparently that's what we're doing. Purdue, UConn, we've been looking forward to this. It kind of feels like these two teams, Joe, have been on a collision course really all tournament long at this point. So we'll see what that looks like. I mean, UConn, Alabama, I thought did a pretty good job of hanging with him for the first half plus, and then UConn able to separate towards the end there. But a titanic matchup tonight between Purdue and UConn. Looking forward to this one, even if it is starting at like midnight tonight.
And it's been this way forever. I still don't understand it. Like, they don't think that people want their children to watch these games? What is wrong with 8 Eastern? Just write it right at the top of the hour, 8 o'clock Eastern.
I don't get it.
That gets you done at about 10:30, you know, which is still late for kids, but it's the weirdest thing. Like, someone must have at some point done a story on why this is their choice, like why they think this is smart. Like, yesterday, some people were like, man, it's too bad the women's game isn't in primetime. And as someone pointed out, I think it was Richard Deitch pointed out, he's like, I mean, look at the NFL. Like, they love the Sunday afternoon window. You know, it's a great ratings window, you know? So what's wrong with 7 or 8 on Monday? I don't understand. But, no, this game is – this is the one we've been hoping to get. Most of the top teams played each other this year. In some form or fashion, these two didn't. These are the clear top two. I think it's a clear top one and then a clear number two, and that's UConn and then Purdue. But I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that we get a great game. Look, I give Alabama a lot of credit, man.
Yeah.
Alabama played their guts out, and in most matchups, they win. I mean, like and also Grant Nelson posterizing Donovan Klingon, at least they take that with them home. Especially they need that if they have to also wave goodbye to Nate Oates in 3 days. But that was an impressive performance by them. But I think tonight, you know, it comes down to, can Donovan Klingon just straight up just guard Zach Edey and UConn not have to help at all? And if that's the case, then UConn's going to blow them out. But I'm not convinced it is the case. I mean, I'm very interested to see those two match up.
I am too. I mean, Purdue, they handled NC State. Our boy DJ Burns Jr., the magical run came to an end on Saturday. And look, I mean, that matchup is just Edey ended up with 20 points, 9 of 14 from the field, 12 rebounds. So, I mean, we knew that was going to be a tough matchup. He's what makes this really interesting, and not in terms of, you know, just it being overly aesthetically pleasing to watch, but he's just such a problem there in the middle that – Can he basically wreck the game tonight and get Purdue in it? And then Purdue, you know, we know this too about them. When they hit outside shots, that's what really makes them a problem. And they shot 40% from three against NC State. So they've been a really good three-point shooting team all year long. It didn't go that way against Tennessee. But can Purdue hit the long ball tonight? If they can, I mean, that's going to be their chance to get in there and win, I think.
Yeah, the number one three-point shooting team in the country. But that's so much about teams saying, well, we just have to double him or he's going to just score at will. And so then, you know, boom, boom, swing, swing, wide open three. So if UConn's 7-footer can actually just straight up guard him, then you're not going to have that rotation. And yeah, I don't think it's going to go well. I mean, UConn is just so loaded. They're so loaded, so aggressive. So I hope it's good. But you know, this does remind me of a couple years ago. It was Baylor Gonzaga, but I mean, Gonzaga was they were the team. They were absolutely dominant, and Baylor came out and kicked their butt. And so, you know, maybe we'll be surprised and Purdue will play well. Braden Smith was bad Saturday, and he's a good player. He should not have been one of the top five Bob Cousy or, you know, finalists, but he's a good player. He was bad the other night. He has to be his absolute best tonight.
Coming up next, the Lady Vols have hired their next head coach. We'll get your reaction to the hire coming up next on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Preds fans, don't miss this Wednesday night Smashville live show at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue at 6 o'clock. See your Preds star players up close and personal, plus your chance to get autographs and pictures as well. This week's special guests are Ryan McDonough and Luke Shen. Smashville Live brought to you by the Black Abbey Brewing Company and ESPN Bet Sportsbook. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Nobody's more excited than I am, I'll tell you that. This is amazing. Looking forward to hearing, listening to you guys, hearing what you want, hearing what your goals are, start thinking about that type of stuff, and then let's hit the ground running. I'm excited to be here, excited to get to work.
The Lady Vols have made a hire. Kim Caldwell will be the next head coach of the Lady Vols basketball team. Caldwell, coming from Marshall, Caldwell 217-31 in 8 seasons as a head coach. The Thundering Herd this year averaged 85.3 points per game. That was fourth in the nation. They forced 24.2 turnovers per game. That was second in the nation, and they got their first 20-win regular season since 1990-91. So a historic season for Marshall. Kim Caldwell, the head coach. And Kim Caldwell in 8 seasons has done an outstanding job as a head coach throughout a couple different divisions. And now she takes the job at the University of Tennessee. So Joe, the fourth coach in the history of the Lady Vols program. Kim Caldwell is the hire for Danny White. What do you make of the hire? What do you make of Kim Caldwell, her background, as she steps into a big task now as the next head coach of the Tennessee Lady Vols?
Well, this is a Danny White hire, and I know some Tennessee fans aren't happy about it. And I definitely saw some, like, you fired Kelly Harper for this sentiments, even among, like, national media, which, you know, it is definitely a younger coach, so there's not a ton of achievement. But someone I talked to in the Tennessee Athletic Department yesterday said that the style of play was a huge draw here, and that she's very innovative. But you got to be great, you know, to be able to get it done at this job. I kind of like the hire. I mean, this is it's an up and coming coach. I do like that. There was not a Pat Summitt tree coach to me that was good enough. I mean, Kara Lawson had a good year this year at Duke. Like, they pulled an upset as a 16 and got to the Sweet 16. So that's good. But I think going outside the Pat Summitt family was important. It's just too much to put on someone who is like a former Pat Summitt player along with everything else at that job. And look, this is what Danny White does. I mean, Nate Oates, we've been talking about Nate Oates today. That's a Danny White find out of nowhere. I mean, Nate Oates, who, you know, was not long before he hired him, he was a coach at Romulus High School. For anybody who else, for like me, is from Michigan for like 11 years, Romulus, Michigan. And he kind of got into the assistant realm, and Danny White found him and liked his innovative style of play, and the rest is history. And so this is – and Danny White likes the, you know, I mean, even like Josh Heupel as a hire for him, right? Like, likes the kind of cutting edge system, young coaches who score points. So we'll see. I mean, welcome to the league. South Carolina is an absolute juggernaut. Just won it all. Almost just completed back-to-back undefeated season. They were one Caitlin Clark heroic performance away from back-to-back undefeated seasons. And LSU's got Mulkey over there, and, you know, by the way, even Kentucky. In Kentucky now, their veteran coach of basketball is Kenny Brooks, who's been there a week. So, so welcome to the SEC. I mean, you know, it's not an easy job, but I get it. I'd heard some, you know, rumblings about her early, and I think there's some real promise with this hire. We're gonna find out.
We're gonna find out. I'll say this, Joe. The one thing I do like. It was time to get outside of the Summit tree, and to your point, there's not a ton of great options out there that are left and available. But I mean, look, I get it. I mean, you know, Holly Warlick was hand selected by Pat Summit. You go Kelly Harper after that, who obviously played for Summit. I understand like the temptation and the draw if you're Tennessee, if you're Philip Fulmer making these decisions with Kelly Harper. To try to bring back the glory days and for people that are familiar with the program and love the program and all that stuff. And I do think there's a time and a place for those type of hires in college basketball, college football, whatever sports you want to name. I felt like this hire with Danny White should have been focused on going outside the bubble and finding the best available coach that you feel like is either an up-and-comer or, you know, I was not opposed to somebody already established that they had as well that wasn't in the Summit tree. But I like that Danny White is kind of going outside the family here and bringing in somebody else. I mean, there just reaches a point, Joe, where it's time to do that with every program. And I think this program needs that. And we'll see whether or not this is the right hire and whether or not this works out with Kim Caldwell. But I do at least like that aspect of it, of going outside the family and bringing in somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to do it. And, you know, Philip Fulmer probably should have. And again, Kelly Harper is a good coach. Has she done more than Kim Caldwell? Yes. But she also had a track record by the time Tennessee hired her that kind of told you, can she get it done at this level? Because really NC State was a disappointment for her. And so, sometimes it's like the unknown is undefeated. It's like, you know, if you have a smaller resume, then there's no failures on there to, but if you look at Caldwell at a lower division, it was nothing. It was absolute, just dominant championship play. And again, I just talked about Kelly Harper at this level. You know, what does that mean? And we don't know how it translates for Kim Caldwell, but recruiting to me, you have to be competitive in every way, including NIL. And I've heard some complaints along those lines with Tennessee women's basketball relative to the other programs. So, I mean, you have to be competitive. But one thing about Danny White, he's very demanding AD, and he's also a very like the only one thing I promise you as a coach is – like, you're not going to be at any sort of disadvantage from your peers. So, I think she's going to have a real chance to recruit. I mean, Tennessee still has been recruiting well. Kelly Harper had been recruiting well, but the problem is it kind of dried up on her. Like, she had some really good recruits early. I mean, I think she had, like, one signee for this class. Now, it was a McDonald's All-American, but one prospect. And she had gone, really, to me, like, too heavily into the portal. Now, I mean, it's a good thing she went and got Rikia Jackson out of the portal, right? But, you know, if you look at Holly Warlick's high school recruiting compared to Kelly Harper's, it was much better. So how do you get that back? Because it's still about, like, I'm watching South Carolina right now. These freshmen yesterday hitting all these huge shots, they're going to be there 4 years,
yeah.
You know? I mean, yes, you can supplement, but if you are leaning that heavily on the portal, then I don't think you're going to have the continuity that you need to be a championship program. Part of that is it's also like older players bringing young players along and sort of like program standards and things like that. I mean, it's not, you can't just be out poaching talent, you know, all the time and having that massive turnover. And that, I mean, you can take that discussion to Calipari and his struggles too, by the way. Like, you have to have some continuity and some people who are in a program for a long time, not just one and done freshmen. Now we're talking men's basketball or portal 1 or 2 year players. You have to have some people who grow with programs like Purdue and UConn tonight. They have that. South Carolina has that in women's basketball. And so Tennessee needs to get back to being a great high school, you know, recruiting program. And I don't see why it wouldn't be.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Sean Rourke from NHL.com. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators. We'll get his thoughts on potential playoff matchups that are out there, including all of a sudden the surging Edmonton Oilers that have creeped into the discussion as well. That's coming up next. Chase and Big Joe have your chance to qualify to win a pair of tickets in the Eurostone Club to see Jeff Dunham this Sunday at Bridgestone Arena. This contest brought to you by Green Trees Company, a family-owned cannabis company and dispensary providing high-quality legal THC products for anyone seeking medicine, relief, or wellness. Located in Hendersonville and a new location in West Nashville and available online at greentreescompany.com. Tune in today between 9 and 11 on Chase and Big Joe for your chance to qualify and win. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Monday morning. Preds get a big win last night in a shootout against the New Jersey Devils. Their magic number to clinch a playoff berth down to 1 point. And the playoff picture is starting to come into the fold in the NHL. To help us talk more about that, we go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our buddy Sean Rourke from NHL.com. Sean, good morning, brother. How are we doing?
Great, Robbie. How are you? Long time no talk.
I know. It's good to have you back on the program here. I'm doing great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Sean, I'm curious from your perspective. So I flash back to February the 15th. The Predators got hammered by the Stars 9-2. And it looked like they were quickly kind of fading away in the playoff discussion, and we were talking about selling at the trade deadline around here. They go on a 16-0-2 run. They've got themselves now within 1 point of a playoff, of clinching a playoff berth. What's been just kind of your perspective, your view on watching the Predators with this turnaround, and I guess the quality of team you think they could be heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, it's been great to watch. I was on the bandwagon for the Predators from the beginning. I just thought that they had a good team, that they had underperformed. I think I might be the biggest UC Soros supporter in the world. I just think he's a fantastic goalie, and I think he gives them a confidence. Like, even when his numbers aren't great, like, you watch that Devil game last night, and they had so many chances to blow that game open. You know, at certain times, breakaways, odd man rushes, which is somewhat unusual to see lately from the Predators. But, you know, he just took it all away and frustrated the Devils, who are easily frustrated at this point with the way that they've been struggling, and was able to steal a second point that was so valuable. And we all know when it comes to playoffs, goaltending is going to be huge. But so in seeing them go on that run, you know, I had no idea they were that dominant a team or could be that dominant a team, but I knew they were better than the team you were talking about in February. And it's great to see them on the cusp of being back in the playoffs, because I personally think the playoffs are better with Nashville in it.
Sean, what do you think about the job Andrew Brunette has done this year and how they play now under him?
Fantastic. And I think, you know, he should be one of the people that are considered for Coach of the Year. I think John Tortorella was in that conversation for a while. Unfortunately, the Flyers are sliding a little bit. Same thing with Carberry in Washington. He's done an unbelievable job without much in the cupboard there, but they've lost six in a row, you know, and are starting to slide out of the picture. I think Andrew, you look at what he's done in the past and the way that he preaches his team to play, you know, to attack and be responsible as well. But it's not a conservative, it's not a Los Angeles Kings type of 1-3-1 attack where you know, they're mostly concerned about defense and trying to grind out games. You know, you'll see the Predators open up and create some offense and still be really responsible defensively. So, I to me, he's right at the top of that list of people that you'd consider for Coach of the Year.
Sean, there was a massive game last night between Dallas and Colorado. Dallas goes on the road. They get the 7-4 win, and it looks like they're going to be the ones that finish at the top of the Central Division. Obviously, a potential playoff matchup for the Predators as well. So how do you view the Stars, the depth that they have, especially at forward, and the quality of team that they could become playoff time?
I think they're great, and it surprised me a little bit. I thought Colorado was going to be the team that came out of the Central. I really like what they have. They've struggled a bit lately, and it, you know, looks like they're going to see that and go into the 2-3 matchup with Winnipeg there. Dallas is a really dangerous team. Pete DeBoer is a really, really good coach. They have some players on their team that have been around for a long time and are hungry for the Stanley Cup. And then they, you know, anytime you want to talk about being a playoff team and being good, you have to have some additions, right? And they've had some young players come in. Stankoven's come in and just been fantastic. They have Maverick Bork down in the AHL, who's been up and down and can certainly contribute. And much like the Predators, right, they have some elite defensemen that can just change a game. I mean, Miro Heiskanen, not quite as good as Roman Josi, but just a fantastic defenseman that pretty much decides how the game is going to be played, right? It's the pace that he wants to play it at. Slow or fast, he can do everything. So they're going to be a really tough out. And Ottinger is finally coming around. He's had a really subpar year compared to what he's done the first few years in the league. But he's kind of found his game at this point, and that makes them even more dangerous.
Yeah, so they're playing as well as anyone right now, Sean. And obviously last night is a statement. I still feel like, you know, Colorado, I mean, you're talking about championship DNA and incredibly dangerous. You look at Edmonton and Vancouver. Vancouver's been a great story this year. Edmonton's, obviously, we know they're very dangerous. If you were a team in the West, and of course we have this discussion around here because we talk about it from the Preds' perspective, but if you were in a team in the West and you could rank those four teams in terms of who you would not want to play in the playoffs, Dallas, Colorado, Edmonton, Vancouver, how would you judge those teams in terms of who you would not want to see in a seven-game series?
Well, if we're doing it from who we don't want to see the most, I would put Colorado at the top, Dallas next, Vancouver after that, and then Edmonton. And I only say that about Edmonton because, A, they don't have any kind of playoff pedigree, right? They for all the talent that they have, they haven't succeeded in the playoffs. And I'm still not sold on their goaltending. Stuart Skinner's been much better than he was early in the year. But I don't, you know, if you're looking at goaltenders, to me, Staros is the cream of the crop in the West. And then, you know, if Demko comes back and he's healthy and he's where he was at before, I put him in there. Ottinger's a little bit below that. And I think Skinner's below that, right? And I don't know what their psyche's like. I don't know what happens when they get in trouble, where with a lot of these other teams I do know, right? If Colorado gets in a little bit of trouble, it's not going to faze them. And Dallas is a veteran team. I don't think it's going to faze them. So, you know, for all the offense that Edmonton can produce, I think they're an easier team to match up against, and I think they're easier to score against. And, you know, if you could shut them down a little bit, it's going to cause them problems.
Well, Sean, kind of building on that, I mean, I would have to imagine, you know, maybe outside of Toronto heading into the playoffs, because we know what a pressure cooker that place is. But Edmonton's going to have so much pressure on them to produce, to have this be the year to make a deep run in the playoffs. And look, they've got McDavid, they've got Dreisaitl. Obviously, those two are as dangerous as it gets. But how much do you think that factors in this time of year, the pressure that comes with this run that Edmonton's about to embark on? Can they rise to the occasion? Can they not?
I think it's huge because the fan base isn't sold either, right? There's that cautious optimism, but there's also that pessimism, right? And you see it with Toronto. Every time something goes wrong, they're like, oh, here we go again. And that filters into the players. It's not a very conducive atmosphere to being successful. And I think it's that way for all four Canadian teams that are going to make the playoffs, all of whom have a chance to win, right? Winnipeg's a really good team and Vancouver's a really good team, but no Canadian team has won in forever. You know, it's been more than 30 years since the Canadians won the last Canadian Cup. So to me, it's a huge amount of pressure. They felt it in the past. They felt it last year against Vegas, right? I covered that series and you could see it coming. They were so good at one point. And then, you know, game four came and all of a sudden they kind of lost their mojo and then Vegas was on to the next round and you thought that series was going to be so different. So I think it's a huge part and it comes down to depth, right? Again, when you want to be a really good playoff team, you have to have depth. The one thing that Edmonds has added, and I think is a little bit different, is Bouchard on the back line. He is just, he's a force for them right now. I think since the All-Star break, there's only five players, not five defensemen, five players that have scored more points than Bouchard. He's really come on with Coffey as his assistant coach, obviously a Hall of Fame defenseman himself, and Paul Coffey, and he's really helped him out and turned him into a much better player than he had been.
Who do you like right now? If you had to pick someone in the East, Sean, who do you view as the favorite on that side?
For a long time, it was the Florida Panthers. I thought they had everything, right? They a really good goaltender in Bobrovsky, a deep defense. Tkachuk leading that team. I think he just brings everybody into the fight. They were the class of the league for a while, not just the East, but they've fallen on hard times. You know, Ekblad's hurt again. They've struggled a little bit. I don't know. You know, last year they were chasing it and they didn't get in until the last game and then went on a miracle run. Obviously, this year they're in. They probably can't get the one spot after losing to Boston the other day. And I don't know if they've taken their foot off the gas a little bit, if they're dealing with some injuries, what it is. But I will tell you that whoever ends up playing them, and we just talked about Toronto, that could be the first round matchup, you know, that's no reward at all. That's a really tough series because, you know, kind of like the Predators and the Stars, they play playoff hockey all year. They are going to punish you. And you know, they have exceptional talent. Reinhart has 50 goals. They're just a team that can do a little bit of everything. And Paul Maurice has seen everything. You know, I covered him extensively through the playoffs last year, through that Eastern Conference final, 4 one-goal games, including a 4-overtime game, you know, against the Carolina Hurricanes. And he never wavered. And then he got to the final and the same thing. You know, that team was outclassed by the Vegas Golden Knights, mainly because they were so injured. Their injury list when the season was over was sobering. But Paul Maurice never wavered. He never got excited. He never got down. He's the perfect guy to coach that team. And it's amazing because he's still a young man and he's been coaching forever. He started coaching when he was 28 years old.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what I was going to do when I was 28 years old.
Sean, last thing for you. In the Norris Trophy conversation, I feel like it's probably Quinn Hughes' award to lose at this point. But you have Yossi making kind of the late season push. Obviously, Cale Makar has been in the discussion all year long. There's Hedman in Tampa Bay. I mean, there's a lot of different defensemen that you could include in the discussion. But kind of how do you view the Norris Trophy race right now?
Well, the way I see it, I think you're right. I think Quinn Hughes is going to win it just because of the numbers. And he's much better defensively than he's been. He really kind of put an emphasis on that. And I think when you have the puck all the time, you don't really have to worry about defense. But when he's been put in defensive situations, he's been better than he had been in the past. I think, you know, I'll be honest with you, at the midway point of the season, Roman Yossi wasn't on my ballot.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was good enough. The second half of the year that he's had is amazing. He will be. I don't have a ballot with the PHWA. We do our own trophy trackers. We'll do them next week. Everybody on our staff votes on them, and then we kind of compile them and try and give the readers a sense of what might happen. We do them every quarter. And Roman will be on my ballot. I don't know whether he's second or third. You know, I really like what Cale Makar does for Colorado. He's another guy that just drives the game, and it is just fantastic. But the second half of the year that Yossi's had has been unbelievable, and he did it again last night when they needed him the most. He was the guy that was there and kind of drove the whole thing as they came back into that game and were able to eke out that second point that they desperately needed.
Well, Sean, it's great to talk to you, brother. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning, and playoffs right around the corner. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I'm actually hoping I'll be in Nashville if everything sorts itself out right for at least a couple of games. So fingers crossed we'll see you all in person and enjoy a little bit of the Nashville nightlife there.
Absolutely, as we have been known to do that. Sean Rourke from NHL.com, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow. We'll take your thoughts. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, it's time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Homer, watch your mouth.
I gotta go. My damn wiener kids are listening.
I bet you the other team has people who believe in God too. So why did God want your team to win? That's all. If you just take that out, then I think we're good. God doesn't care about the outcome of the game, and that's it. And that's all I have to say.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning, either the Rob Rant or the Rex Rant. Joe, I am resisting the temptation to do a rant every day this week and just talk about the Masters the whole time. It is Masters Week. We know how much you love golf. So I am resisting the temptation to break down each member of the Masters playing this week.
Well, go for it, man.
I'm sure people would
I'm
love
not
it.
Not a post.
I'm sure people would love that. Rex Rowe could get in a nice 15-minute nap every day if that's what I did.
That's what I was just going to say, actually. I don't know. I mean, are people get excited about the Masters, right?
Of course. Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll get you a pimento cheese sandwich. A lot of things going on down there.
Yeah. Pimento, you mean?
Yeah, what'd I say?
I thought you just said Pramani.
No, not Pramani. Pimento. I think I just said it really fast, like pimento.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry about that. All right, no problem. So my rant today is just kind of in general, but a situation happened on Saturday night. You know, I'm on dad duty Saturday night, just kind of moseying around, doing some things around the house. And the Predators are in this battle with the New York Islanders, and they put over 90 shot attempts on goal. They can't get anything done. They can't get anything past Semyon Varlamov. They lose the game, and at that point, they had lost four of their last five. And, you know, people on Twitter, they freak out. I was just casually checking my mentions because I didn't really even tweet for most of that game, I don't think, but just casually checking it out. And I looked down, and some user on there that I had never seen before was tweeting me about how the Predators should not have wasted their time, was the phrase that was used, going on a 16-0-2 run, should have missed the playoffs. That way they could have had a better draft pick heading into this next offseason. And I read it. I shook my head. I went about doing my business, went back to go respond to it. And the person had deleted it. So it was no longer in my mentions, which gave me a little bit of hope that maybe they came to their senses. It was an emotional moment after the loss, and they just deleted it after that. But it got me thinking about, like, we've talked about this with the Predators. We talked about this with the Titans as well. I remember we had PK in, and he went on a big rant about this too. When have we gotten, as a sports-consuming society, Joe Rexrode, to the place where we are so concerned about the draft or the offseason that we can no longer enjoy watching the sports teams play the sports in the season? I'm not saying that there's never a place for the discussion of, hey, would the best option here be to maybe lose and get higher up in the draft? But, you know, that discussion, the time for that, Joe, is not early April when you've gone on a run or going to make the playoffs. And if you did miss the playoffs, it would be probably by a game where your draft positioning would be, hey, instead of the 20th overall pick or the 17th or 18th overall pick, you get the 13th or 14th overall pick. Congratulations. Way to go, Nashville Predators. We are so much today, and this is not just a Predators thing. It's not just a Titans thing. It's a sports society in general thing. If you don't have like the best record in the league and are consistently competing for the best record in the West or in the NFL's case, the top seed in the AFC, everybody thinks that it's time to tank and it's time to go find the next big thing and tank. And we've seen countless examples where that has not worked. We have seen some where it has. So I'm not saying it's totally a foolproof thing where it doesn't work. But can we get back to a place, especially when we've made it to this point in April, where we enjoy watching the sports team? The Predators are going to make the playoffs. I understand they got shut out against the Islanders. They put up over 90 shot attempts. The goaltender played great. If you want to have discussions about the long-term plan for the Predators and would it be better for them to get worse before getting better after a while, you can have those discussions. We've had them. I think those discussions are probably better served in the offseason, in like June, in July, when you're making personnel decisions, not after they've gone on a 16-0-2 run, played the most fun hockey they've played in 5 years, and are going to make the playoffs. So just calm down, people. Let's enjoy the sports that are happening right in front of us. That's my rant.
Yeah, it's a great question, because first of all, yeah, there's a couple parts of it, which one we've talked about, which is just the, you know, like why can't you enjoy what's happening in the moment, right? And it's the fact that, like, tanking, you know, there's no one really tanks. I mean, who actually tanks? Like, there have been owners who've tried to tank. You know, we've seen it, I guess, in some leagues. But, you know, like a year-long tank, I guess, like the Blackhawks, right, for Bedard, right, or whatever. You know, that's management. That's from above. Like, okay, this team's going to stink this year, and there's a strategy to it. But teams that are like, once a team gets put together, how do you expect coaches and players to not be competitive? One. But then two, I do think that we have become way more of a draft / recruiting sports world. Agreed. Where that stuff is so important. And obviously the NFL draft is stands above all of it. Like, it's, I mean, we seriously, I think maybe talk as much about, it feels like, I know it feels like it in April, but like, we talk so much about NFL draft prospects during the course of a year. It's insane. And recruiting is, you know, I mean, the recruiting championships, I mean, that, you know, that's become a thing. Now, it's funny because signing day has kind of changed now, you know, with the way the calendar has gone, but that became this huge sports calendar day for so many years, you know, February, whatever, the first Tuesday in February. So some of it is like, everybody wants to know what's next and everything. But yeah, like, is it to the point where, like, either you're the Chiefs, you know, or the Nuggets or whatever, or it's just like, yeah, it's just not good enough. Let's go to the draft.
Well, and the other part of this is the timing too, right? Like, it's one thing to complain about that at the beginning of the year.
Right.
It's April. I mean, the playoffs are 2 weeks from now. I mean, they're going to make it. So, like, we're long past the tanking part of it and missing the playoffs. I'm sorry, but the difference between the 17th overall pick and the 13th overall pick, I don't really care about, Joe. It's just one of those things that it is what it is.
I mean, it really means nothing. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, this does speak to the bigger questions that about sports. It is very annoying, but also that particular sentiment was like especially dumb. I mean, wasted their time.
Yeah,
wasted, you know, time. going on like the greatest run in, you know, franchise history, a point streak, which gives a team that wasn't supposed to make the playoffs a playoff bid. I mean, it's a big waste of time. Tell those guys they're wasting their time.
I'm just glad they deleted it. That tells me that there was probably some emotional suffering that was going on, and then they went back and after the game and decided that they were better than that tweet. I respect it.
Yeah, and that's fine. But also, like, that did cross your mind, and also then you typed it and put it in public.
And then
so,
hit send.
I mean, the delete is there's some forgiveness for the delete.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis. We are less than 3 weeks away from the NFL draft. We'll get Corey's thoughts on the latest with the Tennessee Titans. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.